Hey, I'm WTOP's Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by, just say your name and your title.
Hi, Emile Decoux, and I will be guest conducting the National Symphony Orchestra this week at Wolftrap in two performances that actually will mark the 20th year I've been conducting at Wolftrap. So that's kind of fun.
Wow. So Wolftrap's 50th anniversary is your 20th anniversary of that.
Yeah.
Well, we got to tell our listeners off. I do want to get into that in a little bit, but just so our listeners know, it's this Thursday will be the Princess Bride in concert. And then Friday will be Star Wars, the original one, A New Hope, in concert at 8 p.m. both nights. And remind our listeners how it's sort of set up. Like, you know, you get to come and they you can watch the movie and see the live orchestra at the same time. Maybe, I mean, I've been there a million times and it's one of my favorite things to do, but maybe if we have a first timer for whatever reason, explain the setup.
Oh, sure. It's still kind of unusual. 20 years ago, my first concert was a Hitchcock program at Wolftrap with film, but it was excerpts. People were not doing live complete films back then, but there's a huge screen above the orchestra. It's bigger than any indoor IMAX screen you can imagine. It almost covers the entire stage. And on the lawn, we have two screens for people who can watch while having a picnic or sitting on a picnic basket. And so what we do is they have extracted the soundtrack, the orchestra soundtrack from the movie, and we play it live the way it was recorded in the studio. So it's the only chance really that you can have to hear a genius like John Williams' creation played, because when you hear it with a movie, even in the best movie theater, the best soundtrack, it still gets kind of covered up with dialogue and sound effects. And you have the National Symphony Orchestra, this great national treasure, at least 80 musicians on stage playing it live. So it's the best stereo sound system. And I just discovered, knowing this movie for years, things I just never knew that existed in the score, because you just can't hear it. You can't compress all that into one film, especially from 1977.
Oh, for sure. Thanks for giving us, that's a good little overview of sort of the setup, but let's take them one at a time. So Princess Bride is first on Thursday, August 26th. This is Mark Knopfler, I think. What makes this score such a fun one to conduct?
Well, it's such a great story. I mean, it's become kind of like an instant classic. It's 1987, so it's 10 years after Star Wars. And actually, this time, it's being played by full orchestra. It was originally recorded with a very small group, guitar, synth, vocalists, but not a full symphony orchestra. So it was premiered a couple of weeks ago at the Hollywood Bowl with a huge hit. So you get to enjoy this fairy tale classic in a way that you've never heard before, even if you know the music really well. Music is very gentle, and I think it's a great pairing to have Princess Bride and Star Wars back to back, because they're both fantasy shows. They're both shows with the heroes and villains, and you kind of root for your favorite character. Star Wars, of course, is a famous score. I think Princess Bride, even if you know the music really of a movie really well, you might not know the music is that tender and that beautiful, because again, it can get kind of absorbed into the story as you go along, but it just has such a great heart. And I think it's part of the power of the overall storytelling is this very gentle score. And you hear a lot of guitar. The composer played the guitar on the soundtrack himself, but we have our guitarist in National Symphony. And it's kind of played it like a troubadour song or like an old Renaissance folk song. And that's kind of the underscoring between the love of the two lead characters. And then there's swashbuckling and sword fighting and this, kind of old-fashioned 1940s type of soundtrack. But it's a real delight to conduct.
Are there any, you're the music guy. So is there any, like, callbacks to, you mentioned those four, like any like of those Korn Gold scores of like Errol Flynn or any of that swashbuckling stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can. I think it was, I'm pretty sure it was done on purpose, where it's harkening back to Seahawk and all those, great, scores with sword fighting and swashbuckling and horse riding and rescuing the princess and pirates looting and all sorts of madness. But it's fun because it's Reiner was such a smart director, and it's kind of done as a tribute/spoof in a way of those great old Errol Flynn films.
Oh yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned Seahawk, because man, that score for Seahawk by Korngold and their Robin Hood that they did together.
Oh yeah,
man, both of those scores are just unbelievable. Yeah.
They should be heard more. No, they really should. I conducted a concert at the Capitol with the National Symphony, and we did the opening theme to Seahawk, and they'd never played it before, and people thought it was by John Williams. I said, no, it's John Williams' grandfather. he single-handedly made up that sound.
Well, that's why I like having you on here, because we can do the deep dive way back into the old composers and bring it up. I love it, because you can talk the movies along with the music. That's why I love chatting with you every time.
Well, contemporary of Korngold, because Korngold was a child genius, and he played for Gustav Mahler before he went to Hollywood. And you think of these people that kind of made this up. When you think of, like, why do movies need music? You know, when you are watching a fight scene, you don't hear music in the background in your head in real life. But you can't imagine a movie without music. And in the early days with Korngold and Max Steiner, the King Kong and Dracula, the people didn't quite know what to do. And then you get further, you know, down in music history and film history. A forgotten film that was also a great Max Steiner score is The She with Helen Gehagen. And it's just a few years after King Kong, and they were trying to make a film to follow on the success of it. So that's for you and your listeners, if you haven't seen that great film, I think it's from 1935, give it a look and a listen.
There you go. There you go. That's why we have Emil on. He drops knowledge bombs like that. Yeah, no, it's such a good point, because if you strip the music away from The Princess Bride, it wouldn't even be, or any movie, it just wouldn't be the same. Is there a particular scene, where that's the case? Like, I don't know, I'm trying to get a good soundbite for our listeners, but like, you know, if you took away the music from this famous blank scene, it wouldn't be as...
Oh, yes. Well, if you think of, two things come to mind. One is the famous shower scene in Psycho.
I meant in The Princess Bride.
Oh, Princess Bride.
Yeah.
Oh, I think almost all of it, because the film is almost entirely underscored. There's very few sections where there's long pauses. But you know, film composers, they're just like an opera composer or a symphony composer, in that they plant little seeds along the way, because they're playing with your emotions. So you take like a great genius like Tchaikovsky, and when you go through the symphony, which is basically a tone story, and you'll get to the end and you weep or you are exalted or whatever, it's because he has planted these little emotional clues throughout the entire thing that he plays on, like a device, like an emotional device, like a stage director would do, or an author. And the very first thing you hear when the grandfather is telling the story, there's no music there. And then the music starts with the fairy tale, and it starts with the beautiful, quiet guitar love theme. And he keeps bringing that back in different guises, in different colors. And then when you get to the very end of the film, with the grandfather leaving the room, and it's, you know, kind of makes you weepy, because you've gone through this, you know, just like you do in The Wizard of Oz. It's the same thing. When you finally hear Over the Rainbow at the very end, overlapped with There's No Place Like Home, it gets you. You might not realize it's actually the music.
Yep, it's that music callback for sure.
Yeah.
Great. Well, it'd be inconceivable if you miss The Princess Bride. That's Thursday. And then then Friday, of course, Star Wars. That must be probably one that you've performed in these live concerts probably more than most movies. Because talk about what makes that John Williams score so amazing.
Oh, there's almost no words, because it's a set alone piece. He had written a lot of really great scores before that. And I've been watching these movies for like 6 weeks every day or twice a day just to get ready for the performances. And, you know, from 1977, it's hard to imagine a world without John Williams' score of Star Wars. It's like it's always existed, because it's become so iconic. And just, you know, it starts with the Fox Fanfare, which we play live. And then you see the famous scrolling text going into the horizon. And I'm watching a clock, and on this millisecond, this gigantic B flat major chord just bursts out. And just with this one chord, if you didn't know where you were, you know that's by John Williams. The sound, how it's scored, the weight of it, and you see the sign, the word Star Wars burst on the screen at the exact same time. as this entire orchestra erupts. It's absolutely thrilling. I just get chills just when I'm studying it, because there's something that's so powerful about this music. Then you get that great theme, which is one of the great themes in movie history that he won his Academy Award for, that he also uses Wagnerian compositional devices, because when he and Lucas made this film, they didn't know it was going to be a hit. It could have been a one-off. It could have been, I don't know, a flop. But for some reason, it became one of the most powerful film franchises in film history. But just to care that he writes, just like Wagner's Ring Cycle, taking all these leitmotifs or themes that you identify with different characters and the heroic themes and how they come back. It's awe-inspiring, really, because when I study these film scores, especially great ones like Star Wars, and there aren't very many like Star Wars, I study it like I would study a Beethoven symphony. And so if you first, you go through it all, you analyze every harmony in the entire thing, which takes a long time because it's a big score and orchestration and form. And it has all of the same elements that you would have in a Wagner opera. And then you also notice things that you can't hear when the movie's actually playing. And these people, orchestrators, John Williams, took such care to develop this in the most sophisticated way. And that's why I'm so excited about having this live, because this will be the first time, even if you know this movie like the back of your hand, that you will hear things you've never heard before. And the movie will just jump off the screen all the more, because it's John Williams.
Love it. Yeah, I love how you're talking about that, how it just blasts on the screen with that text crawl.
Oh my God, the audience will just scream. As soon as they see, they hear that chord and they see the words on this massive screen.
Right.
Because, you know, it's in the past 10 years or so, people are so used to seeing movies on their phone or on, you know, I don't know, on a laptop, and to be able to see it, or even if you have the best, you know, smart television at home, to see it on a screen that big. I grew up in Southern California, so I remember in the 60s with my parents, I'd go to drive-in movie theaters, and which was fun. I think I saw most all my old movies on a drive-in screen, which are huge. The sound system was terrible, but the screen was great.
Right.
So it's kind of like the best of a drive-in movie theater, except that you're sitting on the lawn at Wolf Trap with one of the great orchestras of the world.
Absolutely. And ironically, drive-ins made a bit of a comeback during the pandemic,
yeah.
But imagine it with a live orchestra. It's going to be really something else.
Yeah. And the funny thing too, because I was noticing just, you know, spending all the time with these scores, and I walked by a movie theater and I was seeing what they were playing. And I think maybe because I spent my whole life in music, but I thought, you know, the one thing I've missed during this whole pandemic is going to a movie, is going to a theater.
Same.
Because I see a lot of films in planes, so I'm always flying, but I just love the magic of going to a theater, and the theater gets dark, and sometimes they have the old-fashioned curtains open in front of the screen,
yeah.
And the movie starts.
Right,
and it's just nothing more magical to me than that.
Preaching to the choir, man. I do want to get into the more of the actual live orchestra, in the pandemic and just all that stuff. But doubling back to Star Wars really quick. Because you mentioned that opening theme that blasts on the screen, but also give me a little bit on the Imperial March, because that is just as I mean most movies would kill to have that song, that theme, as their villain's theme, but Star Wars has like multiple famous themes.
Oh, it does, and it's funny to see the progression of the films, because I mean he's, you know, written one just recently, you know, from 1977 until now, and how he evolved in writing Star Wars. And so actually Star Wars, the 1977 movie, is kind of like a template of how he would pick from for the later films. Empire Strikes Back has the Imperial March. And so it's interesting to see how he composes for Darth Vader. Because Darth Vader has kind of almost like a Baroque tune that comes back and has like a little trill in a minor key and kind of sinister. But then when you have Empire Strikes Back and you have, you know, Darth Vader's theme full formed is thrilling. But it's interesting because you don't hear it in the first film. And of course, there's no Yoda in the first film, so there's no Yoda's theme. But how they just sort of interconnect. And he'll sometimes superimpose them both on the same music, depending on what's happening on the screen. But I've never seen a craftier score. And, you know, he also will reference Prokofiev. You'll hear a little bit of Stravinsky, Korngold also. It'll come from maybe two bars, and you go to the sort of like Rite of Spring sounding music, kind of pounding away with the soldiers marching through. Little bit of Bernard Herrmann here and there, maybe three notes from Psycho I recognize. I thought that's really great. It's sort of this homage along the way.
And what about that part? What's the instrumentation? I guess it's mostly violins when Luke's staring off at the, what is it, like the double sun or double planets? Or
oh, yeah. It's, I think it's strings. It's very high strings. And English horn. So it looks kind of wistful. But that's a very beautiful moment.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, we could talk about it all day. Talk about sort of, it's been definitely a weird year and a half, especially for a conductor like yourself. I know you're guest conducting here, but remind our listeners sort of like what this process has been for you. You know, Al, I know you live in California, but you usually travel over the country. But so take us into what you've been doing. Has it been mostly virtual? And when did you start getting back out touring?
Yeah, it's been virtual. I live in San Francisco and have a place here in Seattle where I'm music director of the Pacific Northwest Ballet, and we are performing home as the Seattle Opera House, which is on the old World's Fair campus where the Space Needle is right a few feet from where we are. So we have had all of our programs virtual. We recorded live on stage without dancers with a very small group. So if we were doing music from Swan Lake or Romeo and Juliet or Sleeping Beauty, Giselle, it'll be with maybe five musicians that we had to arrange a small version of because we were not allowed to have more people than that on stage. And then it would be recorded for the dancers. They would dance to that and that would be streamed online. We haven't had any live performances with music and dance at the same time. Seattle Symphony likewise has been streaming things, and I think they just started to have some live people for their performances, but it's been very hard because it's totally counterintuitive to not be with live people. I mean, not to be with our dancers or our singers or our fellow musicians and just have just small groups and especially no audience, because that's where you come alive as a performer. You sense the excitement and the energy of the audience, and without that element, it just seems a little artificial in a way.
Right.
And so I'm really looking forward to these performances this week. It'll be the first time we'll be in front of an audience. And since I was last in Washington, I think we had some concerts with Diana Ross was the last thing we did right before the shutdown of COVID.
Where was that, Kennedy Center?
That was at Kennedy Center. We did three performances in January. And it's just, like a lot of things in life, you just don't you don't realize how important these things are to you until they're gone, and how people, it's just hardwired in us wanting to be together in groups to celebrate, to every wonderful, great moment in life and every sad tragedy in life, you have music to give your expression, to give your feelings expression to yourself and one another. And we need that. And so I hope your listeners will come and pick one of these movies or both and celebrate what's great about life and music and art and being together in such a beautiful venue like Wolf Trap. And these stories are also tremendously life-affirming stories. And they're both fantasies, but it's all about a good heart, about doing the right thing if it's even, trying to save the princess or trying to save humanity in Star Wars. Mm-hmm. It's these great hero quests. I think it's good for the soul. I'm so glad these are the first two movies we're doing hopefully coming out of this pandemic soon.
Yeah, I mean, you said it perfectly when you said you did a little Joni Mitchell quote, you don't know what you got till it's gone. That is true both with what you're saying about an audience not being there, because that's something you took for granted pre-pandemic. We didn't, course an audience is going to be there. Oh, suddenly they're gone. Oh, what is this? But yeah. It also applies to, like you're saying, with the movies. You take the music out, you don't know what you got till it's gone. So
yeah.
I'm glad it's all back. Did you say that this is there might be future ones? Like this is just the first two? Like is Wolf Trap going to do more of these and throughout the summer?
Not with us, as far as I know. Okay. So I think the season Wolf Trap, I think it ends because this is very late August, and I think the NSO usually is off in right in the middle of August. I think Wolf Trap gets kind of done by that point, but I know there'll be a lot of movies next season. And the Kennedy Center, which is great. They're doing more and more films inside of the Kennedy Center, which is a terrific way to enjoy it as well. Although nothing is as good as sitting on the lawn with a bottle of wine and a friend or a loved one and watching these films live.
Oh yeah, it is. I always called it my favorite summer tradition was watching those movie concerts out at Wolf Trap. So everybody, this might be your only two you get to do this summer, because obviously everything's been so upended and delayed, and the summer's almost over. But go out, get out and see Princess Bride in concert on Thursday and Star Wars in concert on Friday. Emile Decoux conducting the National Symphony Orchestra. Do we know the COVID policies? I'm pretty sure it's you need to show proof of vaccination or a negative test, but I guess you can head over to wolftrap.org and check on those, because what we say here will probably be outdated anyway. So just head to wolftrap.org.
That's true. That's true. I think what you said is correct, because it's a national park, and so it's run by the federal government and the Department of the Interior. But also, I'll say this, and you could pick by age group. Both of these films are terrific for kids and for older people who might remember seeing Star Wars, in 1977 when they were in school or out of school. But it's a great way to introduce somebody to live orchestra music who maybe have not experienced it before. And the scores are just magnificent. And you're hearing everything an orchestra can do, every sound they can make, every great, amazing, thrilling, loving sound in both these films. And so it's a great way to reintroduce maybe an older person who hasn't heard an orchestra for a while, because sometimes it's hard to get out, or certainly kids, because it might be their first time hearing a great orchestra play this huge 80-piece score by John Williams.
Have you heard feedback like that before of people that said, I just came because I wanted to see this movie. I wanted to see Jurassic Park, and then they're like, but wow, I got totally, opened my mind up to the world of live orchestras.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because we've done, we did Jurassic Park. We've done Back to the Future. We've done Star Wars, one of the other films at Wolf Trap, and they kind of have a cult following. People dress up like stormtroopers and this and that. Or certainly Harry Potter we've done, that also has a real fervent following. But they're astonished when they hear this music live, because it is absolutely impossible. There's no technology I know where you can compress an 80-piece orchestra into a piece of sound on a film. It just, you can get really close, with really great sound systems, but not like hearing it live, because the great thing with this is you can hear the music at this time for these concerts only the way the composers had it in their head. Anything else is going to be a little bit of a compromise, which is part of filmmaking as well. But if you really want to hear John Williams' genius in creating one of the most important scores that ever written, film or otherwise, you'll hear it on Friday.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And hopefully, it's always been sort of a tradition to talk to you every time these concerts come through, but we haven't been able to for a while. So I've missed talking to you, but now maybe this is this is the kickoff to many more to come, hopefully.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So great to hear you. Take care.